From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Dedication and hard work really can make childhood dreams come true. We meet international musician Amit Peled. He plays the cello once owned by Pablo Casals, the renowned musician who inspired him as a boy. The book, A Cello Named Pablo, tells the story, urging children to pursue their dreams. Then we visit Peled at his studio to learn what it's like to teach and study at the world-famous Peabody Institute.
To know that a child has spent about half an hour with me and with this historic cello, and he talked to them and he shared with them history and musical emotions. That's really the best I could ask for.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Sometimes, with dedication and hard work, childhood dreams really do come true. Cellist Amit Peled knows that's true. As a young boy in Israel studying cello, he would fall asleep each night to a cassette recording of the renowned cellist Pablo Casals. Thousands of practice hours and performances later, Peled is now an international performer and an instructor at the Johns Hopkins Peabody Institute. He is also the steward of Casals' beloved cello. After Marta Easterman Casals loaned him her late husband's instrument because she was so taken with the young artist's talent. There's a children's book about Peled's story called A Cello Named Pablo. We talked with him when it was published last year, and tomorrow you can hear a free recital with Peled and his students at the Cohen Davison Family Theater at the Peabody Institute. When we spoke last year, I asked him how the children's book came about.
Well, about 2 years ago, I performed quite a significant concert at Peabody where I teach, and it was reviving a program of Pablo Casals himself, who played at Peabody in 1915. To be exact, February 12, 1915. One of my students found that specific program at the archive at Peabody.
The printed program.
The printed program. And we were all shocked and amazed that Pablo Casals, the great cellist himself, came to Baltimore and played a concert. And he actually came a few times. And we realized that he played that concert with the cello that I have now because he bought that cello a few years earlier. I immediately thought of the idea of playing the same program on the same cello on the same date, just 100 years later. And NPR in Washington, they picked up this story, and I went to an interview on NPR Morning Edition with David Green. Being an Israeli, I didn't realize that it's nationally broadcast, and I was very cool. I came with the cello, with Pablo, the cello. And I talked to him and I played a little bit. And the moment I left the studio, I got so many emails and phone calls from people saying, I just heard you play in Montana and I just heard you in Arizona and so on. And one of these people who heard the interview and the story of how I got the cello and how I fell in love with music, hearing Casals' music, was Marnie Fogelson, who is a children author who lives in Philadelphia. And she wrote to me an email a few weeks after the interview, and she introduced herself, and she said that she was so taken by the story and by this dream that came true, and she wanted to share it with her children. And she wrote a little story for kids about how I got the cello and grew up in a kibbutz, played basketball and the whole thing. And I read it, and I was almost with tears in my eyes. I was so touched by it, and immediately I printed it out and read it to my three kids. And I wanted to see if they would like it. They knew the story, of course, having the cello in our house, but they were silent while I was reading it, and they thought it's pretty cool. So I went back to her, and I said, Marnie, we have to publish it, because I would like kids, for the first time in my life, at least, as a classical musician, I would like to have kids enjoying classical music and being inspired by it, not just people with gray hair. And she said, that's a great idea. She tried for a while. She couldn't do it. And being in Israel,
couldn't get the book published.
She couldn't get the book published. Nobody was as interested as I was or excited about it. And being an Israeli with chutzpah and always seeing a desert and making it green, I decided to take the story, contact an illustrator who I knew very well and go on Kickstarter. Just do crowdfunding, and because I believe that this story is so exciting and so special, and the cello, of course, is belonged to a legacy.
Let me interrupt you on that point, because you've made several references, and many of our listeners don't know. Why are you playing the same cello that Pablo Casals played?
Pablo Casals, of course, was the greatest cellist of all time, and we, I guess, all musicians, we grew up on his sound, on his legacy. About 5 years ago, I was introduced to his widow, Marta Casals Istomin, who lives in Washington. She's still alive. She used to run the Kennedy Center, the Manhattan School of Music. And I played for her. I played for her an audition, not to get the cello, but just to get to know her. Through the audition, I prepared Bach and Brahms and Dvořák and Chopin and all the major cello repertoire. And after playing Bach, I thought that would be the best piece to start with. She stopped me and she said, "You know, Amit, usually when I hear a young artist, I shut my ears off right away. But I didn't do that when you played." And I was so happy. I was really in heaven. And I said, "Thank you, Mrs. Casals. This is a great honor." And she said, "Would you mind if I give you some comments?" And I said, "Oh, no, please, please do." And then she practically killed me. She said, "How dare you play in this tempo? And why do you play so loud here? And why do you play so soft here? And what is this fingering over here? She's a cellist herself. And why are you using this kind of bowings here?" And it was like the best lesson I've had in many, many years, because I'm the one who is doing that to my students. I'm not getting that kind of comments anymore. And she said, "Well, play more." And I played the second moment, and same thing. "I like it, but why do you do this?" We went on for more than an hour. Eventually she said, "Well, let's have a glass of wine." And I said, "Sure." You know, I was just shocked by the occasion. And I sat next to her on the couch. We had Chardonnay. And then she said, "You know, Amit, you're a big guy. I'm 6'5". And the maestro, as she refers to her late husband, he was a small man. "But would you have time to come to New York to my apartment and try his cello?" And I was silenced. I was just, I couldn't believe it. And I said, of course I have time. And I went to New York and I tried the cello and I thought, this is it. That's the end of this dream. And it was a dream come true, because for me to just even be associated to Pablo Casals in that way of playing for his widow was more than enough, more than any dream I had in my life. Now touching his cello, smelling his pipe through the instrument, and
he used to
smoke a pipe
while he was teaching, and the ashes fell into the cello
while he was playing. I mean, there's a famous recording of him recording the Bach suites, which we all know. This is the first historic recording of the Bach suites. While he's recording, he's having he's smoking his pipe. So I smelled that pipe, and that was for me really enough. Then I drew some bows on the cello, tuned it, sort of waking it up from its sleep. That was literally like being in a musical heaven for me. I left the apartment, I thanked her, and a few weeks later, she wrote me an email and she said that she decided to lend me the cello so I can continue searching for my own voice through it, but also sharing the legacy of Pablo Casals with the world. And that was sort of a responsibility or burden, musical burden for me to take upon. And now we're 5 years later, and I've literally been all over the world with the cello. I've made many CDs, taught many, many students, shared the voice of the cello with the world. And now this book is sort of a corner that I didn't expect to have, where I can share the legacy, the story, and what was behind Pablo Casals as a human being, sharing music and being a sort of a universal figure that is above politics. He also got the Peace Award from the United Nations, and during that ceremony he played that cello. So now having the book with me and sharing it with kids sort of is concluding a cycle that I didn't expect, honestly, to have.
That's Amit Pellad here on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He is a cellist, and we're talking about the children's book called A Cello Named Pablo, based on Amit's life. You mentioned your children were silent when you were reading the story that Marnie Fogelson wrote. What was your first reaction to the idea that the cello would speak in this book? The cello is a personality in this book.
It was striking for me because as a musician, we get very close to the instruments we play. especially when those instruments are so old, when they're 300 years old with all the history. And on top of it, especially when Pablo Casals had that cello for more than 70 years. The moment I started reading the story where the cello is the narrator, is telling its own story, where it was made in Venice and then going on through life with Casals and then with me, I was struck by it because that's how I feel about this cello. The cello has a personality. And that, I think, was what's striking for my kids, to hear Pablo speaking. Pablo is a nickname I gave to this cello. And the few times I read the book already for kids around the country, in sessions where I play it and read it, it was really shocking and emotional for me to see the kids completely silenced because they really think that the cello is talking to them. And recently, a few weeks ago in Seattle, I read it for fourth graders. And I always do Q&A at the end. And one child raised her hand very hard and said, "Do you really think Pablo is alive?" That was his question. And immediately I said, "I really think so, but what do you think?" He said, "I'm sure about it." And that was such a rewarding feeling for me to know that a child has spent about half an hour with me and with this historic cello, and they will go home with the feeling that this piece of wood is alive. And he talked to them and he shared with them history and musical emotions. That's really the best I could ask for.
You typically perform in concert halls for adult audiences. What has this experience been like, sharing a book about your personal story with a room full of children?
I was a little bit suspicious about this because I'm not an actor, and I do read stories to my kids every night, but to read in English, which is my second language, actually third, and a story about me with a cello in my hand, I didn't know how it would work, but now I've done it a few times, and it is so much fun because I really feel like I'm sitting at night next to my kids in bedtime and I read to them a story and I'm just part of it. I'm not the part of it. I'm part of it. The story is going through the history of the cello, and one part of it is me with it until present. But the punchline, I think, of this book is the last page where it says, "If you work hard and believe in your dream, maybe you will become my next best friend after Amit." And I think that's throwing to the kids sort of a bone, you know, live up to your dream, work hard. It doesn't have to be a cello. It could be a basketball in the NBA. It could be being a doctor. It could be a Nobel Prize winner. Whatever it is, work hard, live up for your dream. It might happen. And I do feel that it's time for me to share with these communities that I love so much, with this city, all the aspects that maybe I haven't really shared before, which is to play, to share this cello, to share this children book. I've been doing this all over the world, literally. I just came back from India, from Russia, from Germany, and of course all over the States. I can share not only concerts at the school, but I can go out to the community and read the book for kids, hopefully do more of that stuff in some maybe neighborhoods or schools that I wouldn't normally go to, and really be part of this city more than I've been in the past. So I'm very excited about it, truly, from the deepest part in my heart.
It's very exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Cellist Amit Peled, international musician, teacher at the Peabody Institute, and subject of the children's book A Cello Named Pablo, written by Marnie Fogelson and illustrated by Avi Kotz. We spoke with him when his book was published last year, but tomorrow you can hear Peled and his students in recital, December 12th, 7:30 p.m. at the Cohen Davison Family Theater at the Peabody Institute at Johns Hopkins University. It's located at 1 East Mount Vernon Place in Baltimore. The event is free, but seating is limited. We have a link to more information about the book and the recital at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Short break, and then producer Melissa Gear visits Peled at his Peabody Institute studio to learn more about what it's like to teach and study in a world-famous music conservatory. Stay with us here on The Record.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR, become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're spending time this morning with cellist and Johns Hopkins Peabody Institute teacher Amit Peled. He's the subject of and force behind a children's book, A Cello Named Pablo. On the Record producer Melissa Gear went behind the scenes to visit Pellet at his Peabody studio and to learn more about what it's like to teach and study at the world-famous Music Conservatory.
You haven't graduated to this tempo yet. Two in a bow.
I sit here one-on-one with a student for 4 years every week. It's like it's like psychology. You dive into this treatment with a patient, and it's a musical patient, but of course it connects to their personality. And for me to be able to dive into that person and to find all the problems, to fix them, to get out, and then to witness how they change is huge. I often say that it's even more enjoyable than to make a phrase myself on stage and feel that I made a sort of a magical moment. To see like a physical magic where somebody had struggled so much and had problems, and a lot of people cry here on this chair, and then after 4 years they become stronger, better performers, and they're able to express their emotions with this piece of wood, with a cello. It's a great joy for me, and as a teacher, as this one-on-one mentor.
Then I need to hear more the accent for the theme.
More the accent.
Team, hee! But you know, we talked about it. It's an English piece, yeah? And they drink a lot. Imagine in a bar. Hey! Tom, ta ta tim, ta ta tom. Hey! Yeah? If you don't do it, you miss the.
How would you characterize your teaching? Like when you say you go into a deep dive with a student?
Basically what I do is I identify a wound and I press on it so it hurts even more. I mean, it's I don't know if it's healthy in the short term, but in the long term it's healing in a way, if you want to be healed. So what I do with the students, they come in here, young, 18, freshmen. The first shock is to realize that they're far from being the great cellists that they thought they are in their small community, wherever they were. And I purposely break them down, cellistically, not personally, but it affects, of course, their personality. I take it apart to even a person who played the hardest piece, who was like Shakespeare monologue. And all of a sudden they come here and I work with them on how to pronounce vowels and consonants and what does it mean and how to do it physically. And for the first semester they might do just what we call open strings. They wouldn't even play notes on the cello. And they will, in a way, lose their confidence so much that they will even start questioning if they can play. But the build-up after that is what's interesting, because once we take everything apart, they start building up themselves again as cellists, but they know exactly what they're doing from A to Z. They know why they put the finger here, why they put the bow here, why they sit, how to use the back, how to breathe, and everything comes together. It has happened before that people could not take the parts and put them together, and they stopped, like maybe two out of many students. But most of them come back and heal and become much stronger. So it's, I always tell them, it's like an operation room. You come in here, I cut you down to pieces, and then every piece with you together, we fix. We analyze it, we fix it, we put it back into your body, then we close it. Now you're completely wounded. You need time to heal. So you go to rehab, you learn how to walk, but the moment everything is healed and it's correctly done inside, you can run much faster. You see, it sounds stuck. That's what I hear. Now, look what I do with my elbow. Instead of just moving the finger. On top of this is also a method of how to play cello, which is a sort of tradition that I have to be responsible that I pass to them. So we're talking about music, classical music. It's a history of about 400 years. And there's a lot of knowledge. That's why I have on the walls all those great teachers, cellists. Part of my responsibility is to pass on the knowledge that I was so fortunate to get. So within breaking them down, making them strong, and trying for them to understand physically how to play the cello, I also have to make sure that there's a book, like a manual of what needs to be done, and they need to get that information. So regardless of how I think teaching should be, there's a certain information that they should have. And it's a lot of information. It takes years to acquire it and then to master it.
Good. Okay. Can you do it in thumb position now?
You touched a little bit upon invoking other teachers, other instructors.
The teachers that really inspired me and made me maybe the teacher or the musician I am today are the teachers that could make the relationship between life and music. And that's really, because I always tell my students, the two qualities that I think are the most important for a musician is flexibility and curiosity. I really think without those two, you cannot make a career as an artist. And those teachers, the two mainly, that inspired me, both artistically and practically. I mean, one of the teachers was just the practicality of him traveling around the world and giving us lessons. That practicality made me curious to see how can I do that, and I still think about him because I'm curious. Like, how can you come back from Japan and you have jet lag and you teach me? I mean, how do you do that? A lot of those practical things. What do you do in an orchestra? Do you talk only to the concertmaster or to the conductor or to the cellist who is jealous at you? Or yeah, a lot of this psychological aspects of the playing. And then one teacher, the inspiration of art. I mean, I lived in Cape Cod with Bernard Greenhouse, who was a founding member of Beaux-Arts Trio. And he was my childhood hero on CDs. I never even imagined that I'll meet him. But part of what I did was to live there and to work. So I went with him to Stop and Shop to buy tomatoes and to realize that he chooses tomatoes the same way that he makes a phrase. I mean, he would stand next to a tomato and smell it, touch it and feel it and explain to me how he chooses a tomato. And then I realized that that's the same way he makes a phrase, how he plays a note and listen to it, to the beauty of it. He pleases his ear and what kind of strings he will put on and what kind of rosin on the bow to please his ear or to please his sense of smell, to please his sense of taste. It's all the same. As a curious musician, I learned from it how to play the cello. For me, I realized what it means to be 100% artist, that life is art for him. And that was more important than any detail he told me on the cello. That's why now when I'm so busy and people tell me, slow down and you kill yourself, I can't. I took vacation. It drives me crazy. And my family. I can't do it. I'm bored. I need to practice. I need to think of ideas. I need to be involved with this all the time. And for me, it's life. And if I wouldn't have those teachers, I wouldn't know that's good. If you are infected by this disease of art, of music, it's like you can't stop it. You can't. That's why I tell the students, if you are here and you're 22 and you could do something else, but you still want to come here and take a loan and do it and you love music so much, don't fight it. You'll find a way to live with it. You won't be a millionaire, but it chooses you. And if it did choose you, just don't stop fighting. Stop asking the questions, you know, what am I going to do? And I'm not good enough. You are a musician, that's it. And it's a blessing in a way, but it's difficult.
That was On the Record producer Melissa Gear speaking with international cellist and teacher Amit Pellad at his Peabody Institute studio. You can hear Pellad and his students perform tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m., at the Cohen Davison Family Theater at the Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University. The event is free, but seating is limited. We have a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening. Hope you'll be with us on the record again tomorrow.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.